Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Larry Kay and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, December 30th, 2016. And today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're currently on page XXVII in the doctor's opinion. We're reading, through the third line, which starts, the doctor writes through four complete paragraphs, ending to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. And we're going to have our comments on all those paragraphs. Today's readers are, we have Stacy T. on the 12 steps, Allison L. on the 12 traditions, and the readers of the text this morning are Nadia B., Sylvia F., and Lisa H. The reference number for yesterday, Thursday, December 29th, is 9398. That's 9398. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states that each group has but one primary purpose, and that's to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. And at A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Stacy T. to read the 12 steps. Stacy?
Good morning. This is Stacy T. in Cleveland. Thanks, Larry, for your service, the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. I pass.
Thank you so much, Stacy. Let me now ask Allison L. to read the 12 traditions. Allison, good morning.
Good morning, Larry, and good morning, all my fellows. This is Allison L., recovered compulsive overeater in Ohio. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or in prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name, ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I pass.
We have the best readers. Thank you, Allison. Okay, here's how our meeting is supposed to work. Our meeting focuses on the direction for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then we stop and share on what was read. And anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive readers only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. And this meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. So to share, press star 1 to unmute your phone, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today we're going to resume our study of the Big Book, and we're in the doctor's opinion. We're on page XXVII, and I'm going to ask Nadia B. to get us started. Nadia.
Good morning, everyone. This is Nadia B., grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Connecticut. The doctor writes, the subject presented in this book seems to me to be of paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. I say this after many years' experience as a medical director of one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcoholic and drug addiction. There was therefore a sense of real satisfaction when I was asked to contribute a few words on the subject, which is covered in such a masterly detail in these pages. We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside of our synthetic knowledge. And I love talking about this subject. Obviously, you know, the subject that is of such an importance here for someone who suffers with addiction, and as I realized, I do. And after years of suffering from it, I ran out of ideas and, you know, turned to this book in search for answers, for missing piece, you know. And before that, I've done a lot of research. And when I looked up Dr. Silkworth, I realized that this guy, he spent all entire career working with alcoholics. And what he's, you know, this subject, what is the subject in this book? And, you know, today being a recovered person, the subject is a plan of recovery, a perfect recipe, how to escape death from this disease, 12 steps, a search for that spiritual experience. And, you know, and a search for a power, higher power, power bigger than me, you know, power of good that, you know, the doctor tells me that I should be looking for. And, you know, when doctors run out of options, that usually scares me. And with doctors like this, you know, this is not my regular physician. This is the guy that worked with alcoholics all his life, and he's telling me, you know, that I need a power of bigger than me, and, you know, that it's out of his scope of practice here, because with all the ultra-modern standards in these days even, we have not found a perfect solution for alcoholism or for me with food addiction. And so, you know, I truly trust today this subject that is so masterfully described in this book, because this is the only thing that saved my life today and, you know, helped me to find that power that I was looking for all my life and tried to replace it with food, man, you know, you name it, alcohol, cigarettes, anything. And thank God for the steps. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Nadia. Okay, we're going to open this up to sharing. Just to be clear, Nadia started us on page XXVII, beginning with the third line, the doctor writes. She read through four complete paragraphs, ending, "To apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge," and we're commenting on all four paragraphs. So with that, oh my God, take a breath. Who would like to share?
Harlan G.
Kim G. Kim G.
Rita P.
Julia R.
Can you hear me?
Danielle O.
Gloria K.
Okay, let me tell you who I have so far. Okay, I have Harlan, I got Kim, Reva, Julie. I don't know if I heard Arimi. I heard Danielle and Gloria. Who did I miss there? Okay. Arimi, did I hear you?
I'm Heather from Florida.
Heather? Okay, I got you on the end here. All right, I'm not sure if I heard Arimi or not, but let's start off with Harlan, followed by Kim. Hey, Harlan, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. I'm Harlan G., recovered compulsive overeater in Scottsdale, Arizona, where it was in the mid-70s yesterday, if you guys are looking for a vacation spot. Good to be on. Thank you for Team Friday, to Team Friday, too, for all your service as well. This is a very, very profound set of little paragraphs here. This is wonderful. First of all, Dr. Silkworth is going to give us a credential. He's going to say he has many years' experience as medical director of one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcoholic and drug addiction. That's the Towns Hospital in New York City. But I want to take this paragraph here, starting with "we doctors," and with permission, I want to just change some of the words, because Dr. Silkworth is writing this from the position of being a doctor. He is a scientist. He is not a spiritual giant at this point. He's writing this as a doctor. Let's just take a listen here for a minute. "We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of spiritual awakening was of urgent importance to alcoholics. But its application presented difficulties beyond medicine's conception. What with medicine's ultra-modern standards, medicine's scientific approach to everything, doctors are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of God that lie outside our medical knowledge." What is he telling me here? I better pay attention to it, because what he is telling me here is that he knows what's wrong with me, and there's nothing he can do about it. When I needed my hip replaced, I went to a doctor. When I needed my knee replaced, I went to a doctor. If I have strep throat, I go to a doctor. When I have an eating disorder, I go to Overeaters Anonymous, and if I don't work the steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to die in the food. We have dumped a truckload of dreck on the lawn of the medical profession, and we have said to them, "We will give you the wealth of Midas if you can cure us," and they can't. What's the biggest section in any drugstore? The weight loss products, the weight loss stuff. It's a multi-trillion-dollar a year industry, and there is nothing that is going to be effective for people like me unless I work the steps and have a spiritual awakening as the result of those steps. And the prerequisite for that is to put down the food. If I don't do that, I am going to die never having lived. Because in the food, I am walking death. And so he is not just some schlub who walked in off the street. He is the medical director of one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcoholic and drug addiction. And he is telling me on this page that in order for me to gain any type of life, I must turn to a power greater than myself. And the vehicle to turn to that power is the steps in this book. And with that, I will pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Harlan. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Good morning, Larry. Let's go from the West Coast to the East Coast. My name is Kim G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Jersey. The subject presented in this book seems to me to be of paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. Paramount importance. You know, we have to remember, you know, our 12 steps are based on the 6 tenets of the Oxford Group, and that wasn't intended for addicts. It was intended for people who wanted a relationship with a higher power, with a relationship with God. And we're being told, even in the first edition, that this way of living will be helpful to many. But what we have to understand is compulsive overeater, this is of paramount importance. It's a life and death errand. You know, if you read Dr. Bob's story, when Bill came to him and gave him the good news or the bad news about what an alcoholic was, he discovered that Bob had been in the Oxford Group for 3 years. But when he realized what he suffered from, he went after that solution in the Oxford Group with something he couldn't muster once he realized his life depended on it. You know, I've had conversations over the last couple of weeks with people who their sponsors or elders in their groups are telling them, listen, you're taking this way too seriously. You know, if you get through the steps, you can have cake on your birthday. You know, the problem is that we overeat. It's not that we eat certain foods. That's like going into an AA meeting and saying, you know what, the problem is you're drunk. But the problem isn't that you're going to have a beer at the Super Bowl. The problem is you're drunk. Let's teach you how to have a beer at the Super Bowl and be happy. You know, we're going to learn in the coming chapters about the moderate eater, someone who can take it or leave it alone, that can on Thanksgiving binge their brains out, and they stop the day after Thanksgiving because the food's not available. We're going to learn about the hard eater, someone who can stop or moderate given sufficient reason. They might even be some of our binge buddies. But when they get that diagnosis of diabetes, when they're told by their husband that you're getting fat and I'm going to leave you if you don't lose weight, they're able to do that. What I have to understand is if I'm afflicted with this alcoholic addiction, if I'm one of the real compulsive overeaters, that allergy, the food must die. You know, more about alcoholism, which to me is a magical chapter, because that tells me why I need to come to OA. As bad as the allergy is, if I didn't have the mental obsession, I wouldn't take that first bite. So I'm hit with some hard truths in that chapter. One of them is on page 33, where it says, if we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we'll be immune to alcohol. So if you're hearing in your meetings that someday when you do the steps, you can pick up the food again and eat it moderately, that's not what my book tells me. We're also told on page 34, for those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether, which once again is contradicting a lot of stuff I heard in the rooms. But I want to talk about the fact that whether a person can put on a non-spiritual basis, and I'll wrap up with this, all right, I'm hitting my 3 minutes, is there many people in Overeaters Anonymous who are not real compulsive overeaters. They can quit on a non-spiritual basis. They can be handed a food plan. They can do the tools alone. I have to do the steps with the tools in order to recover. So, Jess, if you're the real compulsive overeater like me, please find the real compulsive overeater to sponsor you. Otherwise, you will die. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Kim. Okay, so we have Reva followed by Danielle. Reva, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. What these paragraphs remind me is I could try other methods, but for a compulsive overeater of my variety, where I have the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, this is the only thing that's going to work. And the thing that struck me the most was about the application, and he uses the word application twice in that last paragraph that we read. And that reminds me that I can have knowledge, and these doctors had a lot of knowledge about the problem, but they weren't able to apply a solution. And you know what? I can have a lot of knowledge about this particular program. I can go to meetings. I can listen to these meetings. I can read a lot. And I can know a lot. But if I don't apply it and I don't practice what it suggests, it's absolutely useless. And it sounds so simple, and it reminds me of, you know, exercise programs. I can read about exercise. I can have an exercise program. I can look at the sheet and say, this is really simple. But if I don't do it, I'm not going to be any more fit than when I started. So it's very practical. It's about doing it, not just thinking about it or analyzing it. Then it works. And that's all I have to share this morning. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Reva. Okay, good morning, Danielle. It's your turn.
Hi, Danielle O from Northern New York. Hi, everybody. Nice to be here this morning. This meeting reminds me of my early days when I first arrived, and the one person that I had to learn how to trust right off was my sponsor. I couldn't say I was ready to trust my higher power yet because everything was so new, but trusting my sponsor was something I could do. And that relationship had changed over time, but it also grew, and that was something that I was looking for. I wanted to not be the same person I was that walked in the doors, and it seemed the only people that had any hope were the people who were sitting there meeting after meeting and working this program. So when they say, if you want what I have, then you'll do what we do, that was the instruction I had to learn how to pay attention to, and that was something I did. I didn't do it well all the time, but I did do it, and I stuck with the people who were also doing it. And, you know, that trust relationship is something that is so vital to this program, especially for me, because I came here with so much mistrust, and it's been a journey, and I've learned so much about what it means to be a compulsive overeater. And the literature really helps me to bring that home even more. I don't have power over food. Only when I work this program do I find a higher power that makes it easier for me to walk in a normal world. As much as I am different and as much as I know I can't eat normally, thank God there's people in these rooms that understand that. And there are a few out there who understand it, who aren't compulsive overeaters. But watch what I do, and they see what a miracle I've turned into. To be where I am, the way I am, the health I'm in, is amazing. It's sort of a miracle, if not a miracle, because I never saw this coming. But by being here, staying here, working the steps, sticking close to my sponsor, taking the suggestions, it does work. And that's the beauty of this. So I'm grateful to be here this morning. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks, Danielle. Okay, we have Gloria next, followed by Heather. Gloria, good morning. Hey, Gloria, you have to press star one. Okay, now I really scared her away.
Hi.
Oh, there you are.
Well, originally from New York, from Broward County, now Florida. I've been here for the last over 40 years. And what I wanted to say is that I love this. I love the big book, and I love the vision. I don't share much, but I'm one of the few that when I came into OA in 1987, we did the first 30 assignments with the big book and the AAs. And what I got was, from the very first meeting that I went to, there were 100 people, and I was sitting there with my head going down as the speaker spoke. Oh, yes, that's me. Here I am, almost 40 years old. I knew I had an issue with food. I didn't know what the problem was. I couldn't go into a grocery store without eating a bag of something. Anyway, but what really helped me from day one, I was really very lucky, was I prayed. I just prayed. I prayed, please, God, help me not pick up. Please, God, help me not pick up. And I did it. I did it. And I continue to do it. And, you know, it hasn't been a straight run, but I love OA because I am a compulsive overeater and I need this program and I need to hear what you all are saying on a daily basis because my disease could tell me, oh, I could have this or I could have that. But for today, I know I'm abstinent and I love it. So thank you all for being there.
Thanks, Gloria. Okay, we have Heather next, followed by Arini. Heather, good morning.
Hi, this is Heather. I'm from Florida. I haven't been with the group that long, but the sorry.
That's okay.
Started fighting. I have actually lost 87 pounds the past 8 months, and that's wonderful. That's just amazing, and I'm very thankful to be able to call. And I don't share a lot. I just love to listen and, you know, let all the good, wise advice sink in, and it works. And I'm very grateful. And I did the NA for, I did the 90 and 90, and so, you know, when I came into this, it was, even though it was OA, it still, you know, I felt like I was at home. So I just appreciate everybody's advice and wise decisions, and thank you. I'll pass.
Thanks, Heather. Okay, Arini, it's your turn. Just press star one.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
Hi.
Thank you for your service and your wonderful sense of humor. And good morning, my spiritual brothers and sisters. My name is Irini M. from New York, and I'm a very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thank you, God, always giving credit where credit is due. So here, Dr. Silkworth has discovered that the alcoholic has a twofold disease, the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And with this combination, in his humble way, realized that he couldn't do anything, that no human aid could relieve these alcoholics from their illnesses of their mind as well as their body. So he had witnessed from these alcoholics that they had put a practical application into use and experienced the transformation of the mind. This application was beyond anybody's conception, and it still is today. We don't understand it. We just have to accept it. Dr. Silkworth witnessed the action of power in Bill W., just like we experience that same power in all of us that are recovered. He realized that the problem is not alcohol. The problem isn't physical, but the problem is a spiritual malady. So a power was needed greater than ourselves to restore us back to sanity. You know, they had become recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body and had been given a power to help others as well. That's a double whammy, two powers. And what a miracle, what a new discovery. And mostly it's a gift. They had a message of depth and wave, and that was transforming lives from despair to hope. So God wants to enlarge our hearts, not our minds. This practical application is simple. It's a gift from God. We don't have to understand it. We don't have to dissect it. We don't have to understand it in our heads, but in our hearts. We just need to trust it, and it works. And I always believe what we focus on, we become. So what we practice also we become. So why not practice something that works, to trust the process, to put it in our hearts and to delete it from our heads and become the person God would have us be. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Arini. Okay, who else would like to share what was read?
Penny C.
Amanda R.
Melissa C.
Lexi V.
This is Raquel.
Ben. Okay, I got Penny. I got Amanda, Melissa, Raquel, Ben. I missed somebody, I think.
Betsy B.
Betsy. Okay, gotcha. Anybody else? All right, let's go with that incredible lineup, starting with Miss Incredible herself, Penny. Penny, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Larry. This is Penny C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from the Boston area, and so happy to be able to say that and grateful to be able to say that. The more we read about Dr. Silkworth and his opinion, the more grateful I become to him. In my readings about his life and how he happened to become the medical director at Towns Hospital, as has already been said, it was because of something horrible that happened, the market crash of 1929, and he couldn't afford to keep his private practice. And so Charlie Towns says, here, I'll give you $40. I think it was $40 a month or $40 a week maybe, but still not a whole lot of money to come and be the medical director of the town's hospital. And Dr. Silkworth, from the history, had no intention of becoming, you know, the little doctor who loved alcoholics. And from the beginning, he was a neurologist, and he looked forward to when, you know, the economy would be better and he could get back to his private practice. But he fell in love with the idea that these people needed an advocate, and he devoted his entire career from then on to helping alcoholics, even though, as he says in that last paragraph that was read, that with all the ultra-modern standard scientific approach to everything, that we doctors were perhaps not well equipped to apply any of these theories or treatments to helping the alcoholic. But then I love how he puts it, the powers of good, because Dr. Silkworth's not ready to say God yet. That's all. He's just not ready, so he calls it the powers of good. And isn't this the whole history of how he became, you know, interested in alcoholism and alcoholics and how he wrote the doctor's opinion? It has to be divine providence. It has to be. That a whole set of circumstances that seem like just a mistake became the basis for so many addicts, myself included, who have been able to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I couldn't be more grateful to this little man who was a giant, really, in the history of addiction. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Penny. Let's travel up to Maine, and then we'll travel down to New York. Amanda, good morning.
Good morning. This is Amanda R. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. And every time I read through these paragraphs, those words towards the end of the last paragraph, the powers of good, they really jump out at me. And I think of my years before the program when things were going downhill and they started going downhill faster and faster, and a lot of really well-intentioned and intelligent and caring people did their level best to help me, and they taught me techniques to deal with the discomfort of life, with my eating, with all sorts of things. I took mountains of pills trying to fix this thing. And then I just sort of wandered into my first OA meeting because I was like, well, here's something I haven't tried yet. And I was coming up on 300 pounds, which is really scary. So I discovered not only have I in this program found a way to return to physical health, where I'm almost back to a normal weight now, I found that this program, with the powers of good, what the spirituality of this program, which I take to mean what gives my life meaning, what pulls me forward, what's like, what is the bright light of hope and wholeness and joy and happiness, and that fixed, not fixed, but gives me a way, a healthy way to deal with what lay underneath all that eating, which was sort of a fundamental sense of life's not fair, people are treating me wrong, nothing ever works out right, I'm unhappy because of the way life is treating me. And through this program, and this is a real miracle because I was pretty deep into life's not fair, through this program, I came to learn to accept with grace the way life is and to live happily in the world as it is, not as I wish it would be, but as it is. And that is sounds like a tall order, but through working the steps, it can happen to anybody. And that's all there is, and I'll pass for now. Thanks.
Thanks, Amanda. Okay, we have Melissa next, followed by Raquel. Melissa, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Larry. It's Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater in New York. And I'm thinking you should be a talk show host because you've got a great voice. anyway, you know, what strikes me this morning is you know, that this synthetic knowledge, you know, wasn't enough. Man-made knowledge is not enough to beat this, you know, and yet that was all that I tried, you know, over and over again, was, you know, man-created ideas, weight loss schemes, you know, everything, medical intervention, and it all fell short. And, you know, it's just, I'm blown away by the humility of this doctor, you know, like you go to a doctor and he's going to say, yeah, guess what? I can't help you. You need to become a better person. You know, nowhere in any of my experience did anybody say to me, Melissa, the key to this problem that you have with food and weight is you've got to become a better person. You know, and even in the beginning of OA, hearing it in that way, like I kind of would laugh. Like, what do you mean? Don't make me a better person. Just make me thin. You know, but that truly is, that's what's required. And it's terrifying. You know, I think it's why it scared the lights out of me in the beginning. You know, the God talk terrified me. The idea of being changed through the steps, really scary, you know. But when you realize there's nothing else you can do, like no other solution worked, didn't work for me. I tried them over and over and over again. Growing into a better person and finding some definition of a power greater than me and greater than man in general is exactly what's needed. And, you know, and the beauty is the steps will allow it to happen in a slow progression. You know, you don't have to come in knowing exactly what God is. You don't have to come in knowing exactly what it's going to look like to grow into this moral, better person. What you do have to be is willing, you know, willing, beaten down to say, you know what, I'm going to follow the steps and I'm going to allow it to transform me, because it's got to be better than what, than the way I'm living. So if that's how you're feeling, you know, you're in the right spot. You don't have to have the answers. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Melissa. Okay, we have Raquel next, followed by Ben. Raquel, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Can you hear me?
I can. You're coming through loud and clear. I can hear you great.
Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful day to all of you. My wonderful family. They're so good to be with you. And this one more Hanukkah holiday in which I didn't need to neither pick up nor go and cook and bake for other people, what I cannot yet deal with. So here I am, very happy to be with you. This is an incredible paragraph in the book. I'll piggyback on what was said before me. The tremendous humility. I love this Dr. Silk. I love him so much because I found a picture of his in Alcoholics Coming of AA Coming of Age. There's a beautiful portrait of him, and I framed it. I made myself a copy and I framed it. And now that we are studying the doctor's opinion, it's somewhere in my study. And now that we're studying the doctor's opinion, I have him in front of me with a very kind smile in his eyes, the little doctor who loved alcoholics, but the humility to admit we don't know. So, you know, our ultra-modern, how do we say this, with our ultra-modern standards, I mean, if they left for us, they didn't know anything about kidney transplants or heart transplants, how very modern were they? But the pride of mankind, the ego, we have arrived, you know, we've arrived nowhere. Today, there was a little article in the newspaper that this man had a heart transplant from the heart of a poet who did away with himself. And this very simple man started writing poetry. And they just said, you know, we just have facts. We don't understand. There's a heck of a lot more that we don't understand than we do. But Dr. Silkworth was followed by the wonderful contribution of Dr. Jung, who was afraid to say the word God and devil and all that to Roland Hazard. But he did say that his craving for alcohol, I'm reading from the language of the heart, just two lines here, that his craving for alcohol was the equivalent on a low level of the spiritual thirst of our being for wholeness, expressed in medieval language, the union with God. So in our generation, addiction is, as I feel it, is getting in my community, getting a hold of more and more people, and the accessibility through internet and all that, to think that people just ruin their families through it. The internet is wonderful. Fire is wonderful too. In the fireplace, not in the middle of the carpet. So all these big powers, and we don't know how to deal with them. So people just go into addiction to get that even comfort from how the world is and how life is and how I'm not able to accept life on life's terms. But the idea here from Dr. Silk was at that time saying I'm throwing the towel in. I can't. These people can trust them. They have a hold of something that I don't even know what it is, but it works. I love this paragraph and I love you all and wish you a wonderful recovery. And I pass.
Thank you, Raquel. Okay, we have Ben next, followed by Betsy. Hey, Ben.
Oh, hi. It's Ben C. from Washington State. I'm pretty new. I've been in Vision for a year and a half listening, but Arini's just started to sponsor me, so I'm pretty raw. But I'm actually, it's funny, calling from the Mount Baker ski area in Washington State. I drove all the way up here. I'm on a break from Arini to go skiing today, but I had to get up here at 4 to actually listen and be online. This what Harlan said about doctors being absolutely not able to give us any sort of idea. They're not equipped to apply the powers of good and their synthetic knowledge. I just couldn't agree more. I I remember seeing one of the TLC things on the 600 pounders of some poor person wheeled into a hospital just to lose weight on a fixed diet to get bariatric surgery because they were going to die. And the story was sad. Their mom was like co-enabling them, pumping food into them constantly day after day. It was just a sad thing. That's what doctors think the solution is today, bariatric surgery. And when I went to World Service, there was even an article in the New York Times that said that the Bariatric Surgery Association did a study saying that we've shown that willpower doesn't work. And so what bariatric surgeons want to teach in medical school is for our compulsive overeaters who are obese, morbidly obese, the only solution, they said, was bariatric surgery. And I thought, how sad. The 12 steps work, but it's free, and they're not interested in it. So I just thought that was just such a sad thing to see that sort of propaganda in the New York Times and so little understanding of our disease. But anyway, I had a funny thing just to cheer me up. I sent something to Larry and Kim G., about how we might be able to, you know, one day change the. I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime that there'll be a doctor's opinion that recognizes food addiction. The only science that's come out is only a year old, and it takes so long to get from science to the doctor's opinion. But the one thing that's funny that Larry's got is when this science came out, it was in this magazine called Cell, and they actually discovered last year that there's a binge eating circuit in the brain. It's different. It's shocked them to death. Different than the normal eating circuit. So it's our binge eating circuits that are defective, probably because, like, we used to have to binge on sugar and stuff like honey to survive. And in the old days when we were hunter-gatherers, it made sense to go nuts on the honey. But now you've got honey at candy bars, like, out of the checkout. And so most people are fine, but us 10% of people with the addiction, we just can't. We get in trouble. Anyway. So, but the funny part is, on the cover of this big magazine, there's a picture of a brain, and then on the right, there's a picture of a cupcake, and on the left, there's a picture of a tree, where you can put in a broccoli. And so just this cover itself, I thought was just so funny, because it just said so much about, the, you know, what our little not-filler-upper circuit in our brain that's defective is like. And anyway, with that, I'll pass.
Hey, thanks, Ben. Okay, Betsy, it's your turn.
Hi, this is Betsy from Northern Wisconsin, and I'm fairly new to vision, but I've been around the 12 steps for 37 years, and it was only in the last couple of years that I've actually seen this particular sentence that makes reference to, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good to apply the powers of good that lie outside of synthetic knowledge. I have worked in healthcare for 30-some years, and I have plenty of synthetic knowledge, but I was aware very early on that there was a huge spiritual component to, in fact, that was the only component to healthcare. It was spiritual. And I would find myself being asked to do things like resuscitate people who were just ravaged and dying by cancer and begging you to let them die and weeping about doing that. And we weren't granted the power to let nature take its course. And, you know, so we were led to believe that we knew something that we didn't, like how to save somebody and make life worthwhile to keep living. So when I finally read this passage and it penetrated, I was like, that's always been what's baffling me. I don't have the power to apply what I need to for my program. I mean, I understood I needed to be a better person and I had to put down the food and I had to build my character and do a whole heck of a lot of things, but I could not do it. And as much as I wanted to, and thrive. And when I finally ran into a program that said, well, this is what you are and you must do, which is put down the substance and follow these steps. It says how to follow the steps, not just following them, but here's how you do it. And I'm still reading through AA and OA literature and finding very concrete examples about this is how you do this. And I just am so grateful for that in my life. And I just wanted to share that I love this paragraph. I was brought to this paragraph when we were reading the doc's opinion in my other 12-step program, and there were two doctors in that group. And it was just struck me, I wonder if this ever really sprang out to them, and one of them had never noticed what the paragraph said at all. So, you know, we're all a baffled lot, learning more and more, and I'm very grateful to be recovered and be listening to this meeting. I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Betsy. Well, I'm going to jump in and take a share, if that's okay. This is Larry Kay, recovered compulsive reader from Chicago. You know, these paragraphs are always catch my eye because I like where Dr. Silkworth talks about this notion of, his synthetic knowledge and doctor's synthetic knowledge. And, doctors are trained, through scientific methodology and so anything outside of that sphere is really, really challenging. It takes a visionary like Dr. Silkworth to at least be open to the possibility that there could be something beyond our synthetic knowledge that could be of help to human beings. And, if this didn't happen to me through this practical program of action, that my life was changed, that I went from a pretty miserable person, restless, irritable, discontent, self-centered to the extreme, couldn't stop eating. I just couldn't stop eating. I had one tool in the toolbox, and yet in my profession, I tried, as incongruent as I was, I tried to go out and had great intent to help other people, and perhaps sometimes I did. But with this particular issue, this spiritual malady that I had, there was many manifestations of this disease, and one of them was my just utter inability to put the food down. And, today what I can tell you is I have not found it necessary to pick up a binge substance in a number of years, and to that I'm grateful to the 12 steps, to visionaries like Dr. Silkworth, because how ironic that it took the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous to bring me into alignment with a higher power of my own understanding, and where this obsession of the mind was literally eradicated. Contingent, of course, on my fit spiritual condition. And I'll always be an imperfect human being, susceptible to life happening on life's terms. There's no doubt. The storm is either in your life today or it's on its way. But so too is the ability to transcend that. And these steps in this design for living give us the ability to do that. So with that, I'll pass. We got time, I think, for another share here. Who would like that opportunity?
This is Reggie.
Hey, Reggie. How about you wrap us up here? Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Larry. This is Reggie Oh, in Los Angeles area, recovered here. And, this is really amazing, that we have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. And, I imagine, I don't know the history that well right now, but I imagine that Dr. Silkworth, when he was writing this book, actually knew what that, the moral psychology, which the Oxford principles, tenets, and the 12 steps, that he knew what that was, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception, which really speaks to, one of the principles, one of the steps, the 12th step. Once we've gone through the process and we've recovered, that we no longer have the obsession, we're no longer using our alcoholic foods, then we carry the message. We carry the message to other compulsive eaters. And someone could read this book and they could learn and study and see how it all fit together. But if they had not had the experience, you know, the big book so much talks about, it's one alcoholic presenting the information, their experience to another, and the other gets to see what the recovery actually looks like and feels like talking to another human being. It has that depth and weight because of the experience of the person who has done it. And so it just, you know, it just really strikes me of the power of the, you know, the power of the whole program, that even though it's out there widely acknowledged now, that it's probably not that, you know, it's probably not that effective if it's not presented, you know, that in that heart-to-heart way from one compulsive eater to another. So, and I just love that, and it was really wonderful. What a visionary he was. I think I really got that this morning, the significance of him on our path, and that, you know, the ultra modern standards, their scientific approach, not well equipped to apply the powers of good, you know. And so I'm very grateful that we have it the way that we do, and I'll pass with that.
Thanks, Reggie. Okay, and thank you to everyone who was on the meeting and shared this morning. And special thanks to Stacy T, and we got Allison and Nadia and Sylvia and Lisa. And please, you know, we're gonna close now from a reading of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 164. Hey, Sylvia, are you able to read that for us?
I'm here.
Hi.
Okay, Larry. Good morning, visionaries. This is Sylvia F., a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.